K-Mud Podcast presents.
Will Gibson here, and I try to share as much of the poetry that I have been reading over the last week, weeks, I should say, and I have been obsessing over Poetry Magazine's past issues, and tonight I'm going to be reading from a December 2009 Poetry Magazine. There are a lot of great poets in this issue, and we'll be starting with the incomparable, amazing Philip Levine with The Gatekeeper's Children. This is the house of the very rich. You can tell because it's taken all the colors and left only the spaces between the colors where the absence of rage and hunger survives. If you could get close, you could touch the embers of red, the tiny beaks of yellow that jab back the sacred blue that mimics the color of heaven. Behind the house, the children digging in the flower beds have been out there since dawn, waiting to be called in for hot chocolate or tea or the remnants of meals. No one can see them, even though children are meant to be seen, and these are good kids who go on working in silence. They're called the gatekeeper's children. Though there is no gate, nor, of course, a gatekeeper, but if there were, these would be his. The seven of them, heads bowed, knifing into the earth. Is that rain, snow, or what, smearing their vision? Remember, in the beginning, they agreed to accept a sky that answered nothing. They agreed to lower their eyes, to accept the gifts the hard ground hoarded. Even though they were only children, they agreed to draw no more breath than fire requires, and yet to also never burn. Philip Levine is one of my go-to poets. If I need a good poem, I know that I can pick up any Philip Levine book. And I know that I'm going to find a really good poem. This next poem is going to be from Valzina Mort. This one is called Jean-Paul Belmondo. It begins with your face of a stone, where lips repose like two seals in a coastal mist of a cigarette smoke. You move through the streets listing them. It's as useless as naming waves. That city is so handsome for a reason. It must have been made from your rim. It continues with my skidded dress by a dress body. I stand on the border on heels like my sixth toes and show you where to park. That very night, lying together in the dog's yard, flowers are biting my back. You whisper, I no longer look on the coins. A clearer, clearer day, I see the queen's profile. For you, body and money are the same as the chicken and the egg. The metaphor of a woman's purse escapes you, stealing. You like to mumble, a purse is a purse is a purse is a purse. Also, a real purse in your hand is worth two metaphorical purses over your mouth. They tell me you are a body anchored to the shore by its rusting blood. Your wound darkens on your chest like a crow. I tell them as agreed that you are my youth. An apple that bit into me to forget its own knowledge. Death hands you every day like a golden coin. As the bribe grows, it gets harder to turn down. Your heart of gold gets heavier to carry. Your hands know that a car has a waist and a gun, a lobe. You take me where the river once lifted its skirts, and God, abashed with that view, ordered to cover that shame with the city. Its dance square shrank by the darkness to the size of a sleeping infant's slightly open mouth. I cannot tell Between beggars' stretched hands and dogs' dripping tongues, you cannot tell between legs, mine, table, chairs, others, that dance square is a cage, where accordions grin at dismembered violent torsos. Beggars lick thin air off their lips, women whirling in salsa slash. You come across the chest with blades of their skirts soiled with peonies. Just the images in that poem have been sticking with me since I read it. Your body anchored to the shore by its rusting blood. I wish I wrote that. Next poet that we're going to be hearing from is Jordan Davis. The title of the poem is Amuse Bouge. I miss the mosh pit pushed to the side of the bed. The hard and fast rules, the business, walking across town, the baby's hand in mine, gave me anxiety. Rosardo barely mellowed. Who doesn't love to hear about anxiety? You wouldn't be too wrong to wake from dreaming into an amusement park sluice of Roja, Oedipus, Auden, thanks a lot, Timex hubbub. Those feelings are in their way, good luck. I don't even need a communion wafer to feel the need to broadcast imprecations fade like a docent as the hedge fund falls. Another from Jordan Davis here. This one is, Ira will not be attending the meeting. When working on a small scale, he is practicing a gesture. So much of life is practicing gestures. So much of living is evaluating those around you for signs of damage. Now it is night, morning, a blink away. Sleep is sometimes thought of an avalanche of repair gnomes that attends your pit stop. Would that we were sleeping now. Viable alternatives will be reviled until the point of no return is passed. The only reasonable course of action is to look for sizable flotsam. Redo the resume. Learn a martial art. That's a wonderful poem about change in your life. The only reasonable course of action is to look for sizable flotsam. Redo the resume and learn a martial art. Just something. Something. Anything to keep you occupied. Next poem. This one's by Daryl Hine. This is a series. And the title is Ampersand, a Serial Poem. And these are some of the excerpts. I believe this is a much longer poem in its original form. Such pejorative deformities of sound without meaningful speech or musical epiquas. Annoyances, but hoi polloi and joys. Through our winding, whispering galleries resound unwelcome, and like a tedious siege surround us with that ubiquitous nuisance noise which may take the shape of inflated reputation. Able neither to stun, astonish, nor astound. Those whom obscenity, publicity annoys, who prefer the decent obscurity of publication, and the regardless of the weirdo's weird world disregard. These works may be devoted to the wastebasket, like the forgotten forgeries of some casket. Get letters scorned for prosperity and scarred by repentance, sentenced to a futility of hard leisure, answering nothing but the task it asks apart from any eternal return. Perhaps a masterpiece, unmade, unmarred, awaits the patient's skill that will unmask it. A lifetime passes as the phrases turn, and immured in a single occupancy cell, Each day indistinguishable from the next, and nearly inextinguishable, perplexed how all manner of things shall nevertheless be well. Will a celibate selfish as a shellfish spell out a corrupt and uncorrected text so that each deleted syllable counts? Solitude is helpless to dispel questions as exceptionally vexed as an unaccountable love's unaudited accounts. And to keep your cell that way, you keep your soul untidy-minded, neither soiled nor sold for next to nothing, a treasury of old notions like the notes of a piano roll, which cannot improvise, though it knows a whole repertoire. What ought one to withhold? Idiosyncrasy is no one else's business. Of all omens, the soul provides the sole depository. How many oceans can it hold in its infinite and unfathomable inness? And sealed and secured, the contents of this room turned our intimate alcove into a closet, concealed behind a dirty bookcase. Was it a conservatory or a living room? This stanza become a catacomb or a tomb that serves as a temporary safe deposit vault for your protruding lost and found mind, which articulately could presume to ask of being what could cause it, a question as unanswerable as profound. And up the steps of imperfection we stumble and stall, blind upstarts, our feeble feet astray and unstable, panting after perfections we are no more able to encompass than an imaginative animal. While some describe the world as round as a ball, others maintain that it is flat like a table. Its shape is immaterial. They're like the air. Perhaps better to be sorry than safe after all, seeing no security could enable one to scale unscathed the inexorable stare. Love the wordplay in that poem. So much compacted in each line. So dense and heavy. Next poem tonight is by Amy Breeder. And this is quite possibly one of my favorite titles in all of poetry for a poem. Title of the poem is Because Our Waiters Are Hopeless Romantics. The plates are broken after just one meal. Plates that mimic lily pads or horseshoe crabs, swifts, wings, golden koi, whirlpools, blowholes, and rictus, all smashed against the table's edge. Also, our chef eschews pepper and salt for violets, and vespers and squid ink and honey from wasps, rare lichen grow in local snow, authentic silt dark from the Nile or Tigris. Surely you know that poultry, if cooked right, will cure most common psychic ills. It's something to do with the feathers. But you're hungry. Come in. Sit. Taste. There's breast of swan for shame. Try quail tart for rage, macaw on the poached orchids for boredom. And we serve so many other things, there's really nothing you can't order. Goat's feet, orange groves, prophets and smoke, convent orphans playing violins, flavors of memory, winter and wax, angles of sun, extravagant claims. Don't worry, there's plenty. It's a mysterious feast you attend, but it offers an affable scent of the cauldron, the light of abundance poured over every table and marvelous bar stool. Come in. Now you're getting the gist. At each table's head, that growing pile of shards is not waste, but homage to the potter. The world's a dish to relish, to finish. This conch afloat in broth, a frilly and vertical eye, though portent and probably tainted, is solace like those towers of loquats and glittering scales, or our bright pan's brash mortal clanging. Blink back at the sun and look inside. Our tiny lights don't at all resemble stars. Come in. Come in. Come sup. In here, you will never feel full. That is a wonderful poem, a wonderful title, again, because our waiters are hopeless romantics. Amy Breeder is one of the poets that I kind of obsess over, but slips my mind occasionally, which is definitely not for the best. But whenever I remember Amy's name, I will definitely seek out her poetry.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Next poem is James Lasden. This one is titled, "It Isn't Me." "It isn't me," he'd say, stepping out of a landscape that offered, he'd thought, the backdrop to a plausible existence until he entered it. "It's just not me," he'd murmur, walking away. "It's not quite me," he'd explain. Apologetic but firm, leaving some job they'd found him, they found him others, he'd go, smiling a smile, putting his best foot forward, till again he'd find himself reluctantly concluding that this too wasn't him. He wanted to get married, make a home, unfold a life among his neighbors' lives, branching and blossoming like a tree. But when it came to it, "It isn't me," was all he seemed to learn from all this diligent forays outward. And why it should be so hard for someone not so different from themselves to find what they found, barely even seeking what gift he'd not been given, what forlorn charm of his they'd had the luck to lack. He puzzled them, though not unduly. They lived inside their lives so fully they couldn't in the end believe in him except as some half-legendary figure destined or doomed to carry on his back the weight of all their own, all but weightless stray doubts and discomforts, only sometimes. Alone in offices or living rooms, they'd hear that phrase again, "It isn't me," and wonder briefly what they were and where, and feel the strangeness of being there. Oh, as someone who has had quite a many jobs in his life, this very much speaks to me. "It isn't me. It just isn't me. It's just not a good fit." I wonder how many times we've all said that. David Roderick is our next poet. This one is called "Dear Suburb." "I'm not interested in sadness as just a yard, as elder earth, a library of sunflowers battered by the night's rain. We sliced wide, halved at dawn. I can see how you exist. Oh, satellite town, your bright possibility born again in drywall and on the dairy with the trip lock. Hardly held for years, I slept with my window wide open, wanting screen-cut threads of rain. Blind suburb, dear untruth, you who already know what I mean when I praise every spared corpse. You are my battery, my sad clue. But after I mowed the lawn and watched robins chesting for seeds, I couldn't resist what hung in the tool shed, where with a pair of garden shears I cut all the hair from my arms. That need, that scared need to whiten or clean a surface, plywood or lawn, and the spy wall behind which I stood stock still and sinned against the fly's flyness. Though you live inside me, though you laid eggs in the moisture at the corners of my eyes, I still dream about your sinking empire 20 feet above sea level and the many things you never see. Beautiful bleached gas can, tomato posts bent into art. How half of a butterfly cut crosswise still looks like a butterfly, etc. It might be the first poem I've ever heard that ends with the word etc. I absolutely am a sucker for a poem that uses the letter O as a word. O satellite town, your bright possibility born again in drywall. I love those poems like that. They will always speak to me in some way. Next poet, there's several from the next poet, and that'll be what we end with. The name of this poet is Patti Sabourn. Patti is a phenomenal poet and absolutely does not pull any punches. First poem is called Location, Location. So when you go, wherever it is you will go, take the moon with you. Make it wear that democratic white shroud, pocketless since rich and poor. We take nothing with us, save a small stick or dowel in the casket so we can all burrow through the earth to the holy land when the time is right. Please forgive that I confess your amusement at Shakespeare's mewling and puking in my eulogy. No one laughed. My delivery was off. But the undertaker, he smiled. He told me that when I shovel some dirt onto your soft wood box, suggestive of the trees where Adam and Eve hid from the Lord who called, what were they thinking? I should press the shovel back into the pile before the next mourner. My husband, not a Jew, but a fine man, you said, once if 100 times, picks it up to bury the dead. To bury the dead is a mitzvah that should not be diluted. Each person who performs the act should get the credit, which we will need when that miscreant angel comes to collect his chips. Otto dates my step second cousin twice removed, and let me say, I hope they marry. Someone who guides the bereaved through such a smorgasbord of ritual with Virgilian ease deserves as much happiness as can be gained in the Detroit metropolitan area. Legally, by the way. And by the way, Ma, we never recovered your wedding ring and pearls after some Gonef pilfered and pawned them, but trust me, when I find him, I'll shake till the rich give anonymous charity, or I'll walk away from the trouble the way you taught me to. Otherwise, it follows you home and perches near the deli tray without bringing even a cup and saucer. Were you ready, Ma? When your soul and body signed their final confession, the angels acting as scribes, no Somer in Rochester Hills to stave off ill-tempered ghosts, ungrateful relatives, rodents to watch you until you could don your gaffadoc, the celestial garment being fashioned while your soul went back and forth between homes. I must steal myself like the egg that hardens when cooked, the egg I salt and bite into, half listening to the rabbi's easeful voice. Together we recite, offering God consolation for his loss, though I tell my children that you are with God, and they repeat it so blithely. And I am so busy with mourners' occupations, the burying, the tearing, the endless repetitions of double-taking every mirror I pass that offers no vision to you, I start to believe that what I want to believe, your absence here is your presence there. Wherever there is every piece of land, a personal Elysian field, the best room at the Fontainebleau, I daycare with a unobstructed view of oblivion, a corner booth at the Rascal House, and the miniature Danish taste like mama, as they always did. As they always did. I cannot read that poem without tearing up and getting a little crack in my voice, as you heard there. It's absolutely one that I think of often, both as a Jew and as someone whose parent, specifically mother, has passed. I absolutely feel every line in that poem so closely. Another. This one is called Fever. The heat so peaked tonight the moon can't cool a scum-mucked swimming pool or a breeze emerge to lift the frowsy ruff of owls too hot to hoot. The mouse and brown barn rat astute enough to know to drop and dash while on the bunched up corkscrewed sheets of cots and slumped brass beds, the fitful twist and kink and plead to dream a dream of air as bitter as cruel as winter gales, the scrapes and blow and gust the gate to luff, the whitened ashes from the coal. All right. Last poem of the night. Frostbite. Less a nip than a gnaw, the way a goat tethered will ruminate a rope, the way each in extremis tip of ear and nose unbuds or snail-like toe curled dreamily lets go too fat a foot, clinching filament and tendril pinch by stony pinch until the pulse exhausts and flickers down to drowse and numb the sleep so close, so old, so mild, inside the placid scald and hissing of the snow. Absolutely beautiful poem. Thank you all for listening, as always.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.